portion of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine, the November 2019 edition. And so on the cover of this particular edition, we have Jodi Turner-Smith, and she's Hollywood's new force in Queen and Slim. We're also going to discuss social justice, political reform, human rights, and equality. So let's go ahead and get started. Manifesto. Open your eyes. This year has been a wake-up call for many, but being woke isn't new to us. Essence has always been conscious, especially as it relates to how the color of our skin impacts our lives. For our woke issue, we highlight 100 women making incredible strides in activism, the arts and politics, as well as sports, business, and every space in between. This year's list includes 5-time Olympic medalist Simone Biles, activist and storyteller Dream Hampton, and attorney Sean Holly, who was instrumental in the 2018 release from prison of Alice Marie Johnson. In Free at Last, we share Johnson's story of redemption and speak exclusively with Centoya Brown following her release last August after 15 years behind bars. Through their experiences, we explore the ways Black women are affected by the justice system and what we can do to support those who are fighting for their rights, for their freedom. We're also excited to introduce breakout star Jodi Turner-Smith as our cover girl. This month, she delivers a powerful performance in Queen and Slim, a timely tale about our community's fraught interaction with law enforcement, helmed by Grammy Award-winning director Melina Matsoukas and written by Emmy winner Lena Waithe. As you'll see in the film and on our pages, Jodi is surely who's next. Tony and Emmy Award winner Cynthia Erivo is worthy of celebration too, most recently for her work in Harriet. We also feature talent from the small screen with The Daily Show's Dulce Salone opening our beauty section and fully embracing her curves. To be woke is to know where you're from and be positive about where you're heading. It's being able to rewind the clock to trace the 400 years since the first slave ship arrived in Virginia, while looking to the future of Black women mastering the realm of Owl. We've come a long way, yet there's more ground to cover, and Black women are leading the charge. As we work to create the change we want to see in the world, we must remember that we as are one another's solace and strength. As the old proverb states, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. We are one. And that was beautifully written by Moana Liu, and she is the Chief Content and Creative Officer for Essence Magazine. So the first topic that we're going to go over is views. The number one view that we're talking about is World Changer. Idris Sandu's coding skills are nothing to play with. Sandu, who was born in Ghana and raised in South Bay, California, is simply put a genius. The 22-year-old has already developed algorithms for Instagram, Snapchat, and Uber, and been named a presidential scholar by Barack Obama. He also joined forces with the late Nipsey Hussle to create the rapper's Marathon clothing store, noted as one of the world's first smart retail experiences. Outside of collaborating with big names, Sandu, who considers himself a cultural architect, is passionate about bringing more Blacks into the tech field. He recently announced via social media that he had purchased land in Accra, Ghana, to build a state-of-the-art tech hub. I've wanted to do this since I was a kid, the former Google coder wrote on his Instagram page. I've been in Ghana for the last couple of weeks working for the people and making sure I was on the ground to ensure we make change. And the number two trending topic that we're talking about is something is amiss. In the nation's capital, 70% of the people or 70% of the people stopped by law enforcement are blacks, yet they make up less than half of the population. This finding was revealed in a 14-page report detailing 11,000 stops over a nearly one-month period. The data released by the Metropolitan Police Department comes in response to a 2016 law that requires stats to be collected on all temporary investigative detentions, regardless of whether there is an arrest. Number three, no denying our dollars. Our new report from Nielsen aptly titled It's in the Bag, Black Consumers Path to Purchase, proves that black culture is a high driver of consumer sales. In 2018, 50 of the 75 top streaming songs were in the hip-hop genre, and 17 of the top 25 artists with song streaming were rappers. The Recording Industry Association of America notes that streaming account for 75% of industry revenue last year. Number four, a low-stakes startup, American Tax Geeks, wants to create more black entrepreneurs. That's why the business, known for paying all the establishment costs for its franchise owners, has allotted $112 million for African Americans to start their own American Tax Geeks office. In addition to waiving a $40,000 network fee, the rapidly growing company also provides free training. Number five, pushing for a fix. A volunteer effort is leading the charge for getting new lead-free water pipes for the people of Newark, New Jersey. This summer, the clean water crisis plaguing the state's largest city reaching a fever pitch, prompting volunteers to go door to door to sign up residents for lead service line replacements. An estimated 18,000 homes in the area have been exposed to lead contaminated water because of old supply lines. Number six, now is not the time to be silent. Find your purpose. Purpose it relentlessly, passionately, and loudly. Be persistent and win. And that was a quote from Angela Bassett, and that's when she was accepting the Icon Award at the 2019 Black Girls Rock event. Number seven, making amends. The Virginia Theological Seminary, also known as VTS, is ready to confront the past and redress the role of school or the role the school played in slavery and segregation. In September, the academic institution, which is located in Alexandria, Virginia, announced that it has set aside $1.7 million to pay restitution to the descendants of enslaved persons who labored there. VTS plans to set up a task force to find family members who are entitled to the money. Number eight, the fight for reproductive rights. Planned Parenthood is cutting ties with the federal Title V family planning program. Under the Trump administration, the government service that provides funding for low-income and uninsured individuals no longer allows grantees to arrange abortion counseling. Planned Parenthood has decided not to comply with the new rules, which it says are unethical and interfere with the doctor-patient relationship. Number nine, a neighborhood haven. A trailblazing community center has made its way to the Bay Area. Restore Oakland, a 20,000-square-foot building, is home to a host of tenants focused on restorative justice. Residents can have access to legal help, free job training, meeting and workspaces, and healthy food options. The center was constructed by the black-owned nonprofit architect firm Designing Justice and Designing Spaces. And number 10 of the trending topics that we're talking about is an applaudable appointment. Jacqueline Stewart, professor of cinema and media studies at the University of Chicago, is bringing a little color to classic flicks. Stewart is the first African-American to host Turner Classic Movie Silent Sunday Night, which shows films from this silent era in the network's 25-year history. So the next article that we're going to go over is 400 Years of History Remembered. In 1619, Africans stolen from the Motherhood arrived in the Virginia colony. Their horrific journey set in motion centuries of American slavery. Angela landed in the Virginia colony in the sweltering summer of 1619. After being brutally snatched from her native Africa, along with other Africans, she was held captive in the bowels of a boat bound for a strange new land. That crossing, some 10,000 nautical miles that became known as the Middle Passage, was harrowing. It would establish the race-based system of bondage that led to 246 years of slavery in America. Now, 400 years later, the nation is honoring with commemorative events around the country and in Africa. The ancestors whose painful yet courageous legacy lingers. Imagine being chained to the holds of these ships where there is nowhere to go to the bathroom, says Robert Trent Vinson, PhD professor of history and Africana studies at William and Mary University in Williamsburg, Virginia. Imagine being on an ocean for the first time, dealing with seasickness and having to wallow in your excrement and vomit. And in the age of sail, the journey could take months. Yet even before the Middle Passage, Angela and her fellow Africans were treated as human cargo, enduring physical and emotional trauma. They were kidnapped in a series of incursions of the Portuguese were waging against the African kingdoms of Congo and Ndongo, current-day Angola, and surrounding kingdoms, says Cassandra Nubiak-Alexander, Ph.D., Dean of the College of Liberal Arts at Norfolk State University. The Portuguese wanted gold, and they wanted people. European forces and the Mbangala, marauding African mercenaries, were among those who played roles in the transatlantic slave trade. The captives had to march hundreds of miles to the coastal town of Luanda. The historians adds, the capital of Angola was a major slave trade port. About 350 Africans were forced to board the San Juan Bautista, a Portuguese slave ship bound for Veracruz. On the coast of Mexico, it stopped in Jamaica, selling dozens of children. As the vessel neared its destination, it was attacked in the Gulf of Mexico by two English ships, the White Lion and the Treasurer. The privateers might have been expecting gold when they boarded. Instead, they discovered the Africans and stole approximately 60 of them. Both boats then headed for the Virginia colony, with the White Lion arriving in late August. Some historians cite the date as August the 20th, 1619, while others put it as August the 25th. It landed at Point Comfort, Virginia, says Mary Elliott, curator of African slavery at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. The site is present-day Hampton, Virginia. It's now Fort Monroe National Monument. Records from Virginia Colony Secretary John Rolfe, who was formerly married to the Native American Princess Pocahontas, indicate that 20 and odd Negroes, were exchanged for food. They were the first in this area. African slaves had been brought to the Spanish colonies in North America as early as the 1500s. Many more would follow. Angela and approximately 28 captives arrived on the Treasurer 4 days later, Vinson says. The ship remained briefly before setting sail for the English colony of Bermuda, where most were sold, including Angela. He notes that a few months later, in February of 1620, Angela and a handful of other enslaved Africans were brought back to Virginia aboard the Treasurer. She and fellow captives from West Central Africa were most, if not all, of the 32 Africans recorded in Virginia's May 1620 census. The captive humans on those ships, whose Christian names such as William, Francis, Margaret, John, and Edward, would have been given to them by Portuguese missionaries in Africa, would be the founding mothers and fathers of millions of African-American descendants and would dramatically alter the course of history. The Virginia colony, which began as the Jamestown settlement, was founded in 1607. As England's first permanent colony in North America, it was where the fledgling United States of America took root. You have the meeting of the House of Burgesses, which is the first democratic government, says Eliot. When these white male landowners conveyed in 1619, the representatives sought to provide just laws for the happy guiding and governing of the people they're inhibiting. Yet the cruel irony of Africans in servitude made the reality far from happy. We need to remember that our ancient culture hails from countries and civilizations where love was expressed and taught through socialization, says Kalita Nichols Fairfax, Ph.D., a professor, historiographer, and member of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, which was established in 1915 by the father of black history, Carter G. Woodson. When Africans were forced onto the white lion, they landed in social economic environs that disrupted traditions and socialization practices. Records suggest most of the early Africans were acquired by wealthy English planters and colonial officials. Angela was listed in a 17th century colony-wide census as living in the household of Captain William Pierce, a prosperous planter and merchant. Angela was the first African woman documented in the Virginia colony. Though her name was listed as Angelo, says Newby Alexander, she was referred to as that Negro woman who raised pigs, even though Angela was probably helping Pierce's wife, Joanne, maintain a four-acre garden. Another early African couple was Isabella and Anthony. They were servants of Captain William Tucker, a military commander, and by 1625, they had a son, William. It's believed he was surnamed for Captain Tucker, who it's said stood as his godfather. William Tucker is recognized as the first identified child of African parents baptized in Jamestown. Carolita Jones Cope, age 60, and her family believe they are his descendants on her mother's side. While the clan doesn't have definite proof, members cite geological research and oral traditions. Relatives travel to Hampton in August to pay tribute to the ancestors at the Tucker family cemetery, which dates back to 1896. We're a symbol of all who pushed through and survived slavery, says Cope. It shows how strong of a people we are. The Tucker family gathering dovetailed with the 2019 commemoration of the first African landing in Hampton. Hosted by the Hampton, Virginia 2019 Commemorative Commission with the Fort Monroe Authority, the city of Hampton, and a handful of local partners. From a sunrise African naming ceremony and spiritual cleansing on the beach to a concert and rapper and actor Common and Sounds of Blackness, the events drew dignitaries, celebrities, and several thousand people from across the country and the world who paid homage with prayers and tears. about a dozen members of the Congressional Black Caucus, along with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, also traveled to Ghana to mark the 1619 historical event. Susan L. Taylor, editor-in-chief emerita of Essence Magazine and founder and CEO of the National Cares Mentoring Movement, along with her family, joined the trip. The NAACP led a large delegation to Ghana this summer as well. Both delegations met with Ghanaian government officials and paid their respects at Cape Coast and Elmina castles, where captives were kept before the sea voyage, and at the door of no return from where they boarded the slave ships from 1501 to 1867. Nearly 13 million people from the African continent were captured, sold, and transported to the Americas, Portugal, Spain, England, France, and America were among the countries that made lucrative profits from selling human bodies. Despite the cruelties of bondage, early Africans adapted to their new environment while holding on to certain customs. They infused America with art, music, culinary practices, trading systems, agriculture, and architectural techniques and language, says Newby Alexander. The landing of the first recorded Africans in 1619 marked the moment African culture became an integral part of American culture and an indelible influence on the development of our nation. After 1625, Angela no longer appeared in the census. The Jamestown Rediscovery Foundation, in partnership with the National Park Service, excavated the property of Pierce, her owner. Archaeologists sought to uncover evidence of the house, outbuildings, gardens, and artifacts that could shed light on the household's activities, diet, and occupants. While Angela would not have had many possessions, experts believe her presence can still be understood through subtle clues in the archaeological record. Carsonia Wise Whitehead, Ph.D., an author, a radio host, and an associate professor at Loyola University in Maryland, observes that stories of women like Angela are routinely left out of the dominant narrative about early American history. There's a sense that since Black women are assumed to be a part of the background, they did not have a hand or a voice in the creation of our nation, she says. We do know that their very existence was an important act of agency and survival, despite continuous rape, oppression, violence, and abuse. We are the descendants of Black women, our foremothers, who chose to survive, go forward rather than go backward, she adds, noting that their revolutionary acts and relentless fight for freedom should make us proud. And this was written by Donna M. Owens, and she is an award-winning multi-platform journalist based in Baltimore. The next article that we're going to go over is titled, Is It High Time for Black People to Embrace Marijuana? Writer Jamila Lemick says, it may be in our collective best interest to make peace with pot. When it comes to the relationship between marijuana and Black people, complicated is a gross understatement, and for many good reasons. Alas, it's time for us to reckon with those feelings and fight for the right to have full access to the mighty herb. Medical marijuana is available in 33 states and Washington, D.C., and 11 states now permit recreational use. As legalization and decriminalization efforts continue across the country, cannabis is also becoming more and more mainstream. Yet while suburban pot moms rave about how smoking weed has improved their lives, Black people remain nearly four times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession than whites, despite the fact that both groups use the drug at nearly the same rate. Meanwhile, fawning media profiles of young white present a cringe-inducing and accurate picture of the booming legal weed industry. Of the participants in a 2017 Marijuana Business Daily Survey of 389 cannabis businesses, owners and founders, 81% were white, with blacks making up a paltry 4% of the pie. There is something particularly cruel about watching white people, some of whom actively supported and have benefited from the disenfranchisement of black marijuana users, now profiting from changing attitudes and increased access to the drug. Yet while we have every right to be angry, we also owe it to ourselves to figure out ways to tear down the obstacles that have stopped us from enjoying all that marijuana has to offer. Some of the barriers to entry for black entrepreneurs looking to get into the legal cannabis business are not unlike the challenges that prevent us from entering and thriving in other industries. Lack of capital, resources, and experience. And while some would-be cannabis entrepreneurs are prevented from getting into the business because of prior convictions, for others, the long history of blacks being targeted for marijuana arrests has led to cold feet. Quote, we are eager and somewhat apprehensive because there is a history of making reasonable demands regarding our inclusion in this society and being ignored and worse by a power structure founded on white male dominance, says L. Anton Seals Jr., the founder of Ours, which is Organic Urban Revitalization Solutions. It is a startup focused on cannabis production and cultivation, as well as community engagement and education. So many of our people are incarcerated for minor infractions and felonies, which took them out of the game, says Philip Johnson, owner and operator of Aquila Dispensaries in Admiral, Oklahoma. Many of our folks believe the things that we were told to us, the things that were said about us, things that simply are not true, they explain. It's worth interrogating ourselves about how persistent antagonisms within the African community may have weakened our resolve when it comes to fighting against the drug laws that have done such damage to us and to supporting our brothers and sisters who have found themselves in legal trouble because of this. And it looks like that we've actually run out of time today, and we'll cover this for next week as well. We'll get back on this topic. But we've run out of time today for episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter, and you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.